You're listening to a Lewis and Clark podcast. Visit us online at www.lclark.edu.
Lewis and Clark Law student Ryan Talbot grew up in Marionville, Pennsylvania, situated on the southern boundary of the Allegheny National Forest, where he spent his youth camping and hiking. When a favorite camping spot in the forest was taken over for oil and gas exploration, Ryan took his love of the Alleghenies to an organization called the Allegheny Defense Project. He now serves as the organization's executive director, which works to preserve the forest's wilderness areas and restore areas after commercial use. In this podcast, Ryan talks about life as a law school student and how his studies fit with his interest in environmental protection work. So I thought maybe we could start by talking a little bit about growing up near a national forest and how that affected your relationship to nature and your interest in environmental issues.
Well, sure. Like you said, I grew up in Marionville, Pennsylvania, and it's on the southern boundary of the Allegheny National Forest. You know, all around me was this, 513,000 acres of public land that, you know, provided excellent opportunities for hiking, camping, cross-country skiing in the winter. And, I tend to think that people like myself, even who grew up there, didn't actually fully appreciate what was there. And in about the late 90s, early 2000s, oil and gas drilling started to increase a bit, and then by the mid-2000s it had escalated about 1,000% from what it previously was, and all of a sudden vast stretches of the forest where once was just unfragmented habitat for wildlife and, you know, trees everywhere, all of a sudden was just a fragmented landscape of roads and drilling pads and pipelines and electrical lines, and, you know, the entire landscape changed in the course of a year or two. So that's what really got me involved in the Allegheny Defense Project. And the situation there is kind of unique in that the federal government doesn't own the mineral rights underneath the forest. So the Forest Service doesn't consider, or at least in the past, did not consider the drilling there a federal action. So there was no environmental analysis. There was no public input into the decision-making process. It was just all of a sudden, if you had a favorite camping spot, and next thing you know, it turns into a drilling site. You had no idea and no input into that process whatsoever. And so Allegheny Defense Project kind of said, well, you know, even though you don't own the mineral rights, the federal government, it's still federal land and it's impacting federal resources.
And I suppose these are legal challenges happening in lots of national forests, or is this...
In terms of this kind of legal challenge, it's kind of unique to the Allegheny only because it's the Allegheny almost stands alone in the amount of mineral rights that are privately owned. It's 93% of the minerals underneath the national forest are in private ownership, and that eclipses any other national forest, and especially national forests in the western United States, or public domain lands, and the federal government for the most part owns both the surface and the subsurface. So if any drilling is occurring in the west, it's most likely federal leasing. So the public is involved in that process. But when you're in the East and you're dealing with private mineral rights, the industry argues, and so far has prevailed, that the only laws the Forest Service has to comply with are state property laws.
So what made you decide on Lewis and Clark Law School?
Definitely the Environmental Law Clinic. I'd actually gone to Vermont Law School for a master's program and kind of decided that having grown up in the Northeast and always wanting to come to Portland and knowing the reputation of the law school, I just kind of wanted to change. So that's when I, you know, decided to move out to Portland and apply here.
What do you think you've learned so far that has a direct impact on your work as an executive director of an environmental organization?
That's a good question. Certainly in terms of, you know, the position I'm in right now and what I'm doing in terms of litigation work, going through that semester of civil procedure was enormously helpful. I mean, I kind of felt like I had a basic understanding of civil procedure before I started law school, but going through that semester, going through the specific rules, and going through jurisdictional issues, and just really seeing how it is that you get into court and go through the entire process. You know, now when I go back and I'm working on briefs for summary judgment or, you know, things of that nature, it's, you know, a lot easier and having that understanding and that background.
Do you think that your coursework or your interactions with fellow law school students or your professors has opened you to new ideas or ways of thinking about environmental law that you hadn't considered before?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, going through a semester of torts and hearing some of, you know, some arguments on that maybe there's other approaches to regulating environmental issues outside of, you know, congressional statutes, you know, going through torts, and I think that's a bad idea. But, you know, just hearing those arguments, I think, you know, I think it's good to have discussion, to have adversarial approaches to different issues. So, yeah, and then just definitely having the experience of working and volunteering with NEDC, Northwest Environmental Defense Center, has been another, you know, hugely important experience. So, and the proximity of, like, being here and going down to the Environmental Law Conference that's coming up in a couple weeks. So it's just, like, just being in Portland and having just all these opportunities and connections that are available in this community is definitely beneficial.
So it sounds really complicated as somebody who's on the outside and doesn't understand the, it seems like there are a lot of nuances around understanding the historical nature and then the current processes of how policies are developed and how they're implemented. And so I'm curious what, I guess, given the national dialogue on environmental issues, that most people don't understand the intricacies and probably don't have the time to devote to tracking that kind of thing. Are you hopeful at all that that we can kind of move the national dialogue along and make progress raising awareness and understanding?
I'm mixed. I mean, it does seem like we have this ability to put things off and ignore the situation until it reaches a boiling point. I mean, that's how a lot of our environmental legislation that passed in the 60s and 70s came about. You know, we got Clean Water Act after rivers were catching on fire. We got the Clean Air Act after incidents where, you know, thermal inversions created cities that were choking and people were dying because of all the pollution. So we definitely have this ability to just ignore the situation until it really impacts us personally. And I think that's the challenge, is to actually be more proactive instead of reactive. And you know, today we have tools that weren't available 30, 40 years ago because of the internet. And I think, you know, you see groups being more effective and using the internet with blogs and YouTube. You know, so that definitely creates an ability to be far more proactive, and so things don't get to that point, so that then you're being more remedial and addressing, you know, a problem that's already out of control. So
great. Well, thanks so much for talking with us.
Sure. Thank you.